It's the same dream night after night. I hear this beating, this rhythm. I'm wandering like an unfulfilled lost soul through this misty haze. But I keep following the sound. It seems like I walk forever. In the distance I see something beautiful, magnificent. It seems so far away, yet so near that I can reach out and touch it. As I approach closer, I can see millions of people, all ages, races, religions, philosophies. People from around the world and from every nation on terrestrial Earth. They're moving in mass towards something mystical, magical, magnetic. As I follow them, all of a sudden they begin to create a path for me to walk through. I can see something massive on the horizon. As I get closer, I see a banner unfurling in the gentle wind. It says, "Welcome to the revolution." The crowd begins cheering and celebrating. I'm so overwhelmed by the experience that I wake, still hearing the beating of the heart. And then my dream becomes crystal clear. I have found my holy grail. My thirst is quenched. My lifelong quest finally achieved. I have found AboveTopSecret.com. And my beating heart joins theirs. I have become a member. Welcome to our revolution. AboveTopSecret.com.
Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. I'm Justin Case. Welcome to another lovely edition of the Above Politics Show.
And I'm Martin Bain.
So how are you today, Martin?
I'm doing real well. You?
You know, I'm staying out of trouble for the moment, but man, that mailbag was heavy today. I don't know if you saw what I brought into the studio, but it's full.
It certainly is, and the worst thing is you dumped it on my desk, so now I'm going to be expected to go through it all.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was your desk. I thought that was our intern's desk. They promised us an intern, you know.
Ah, yes. You realize the smallest desk must be mine?
Well, you know, we can work something out. I mean, we still have to interview this intern, so we'll just we'll give them the smallest desk. But for the time being, let's jump into last week. Trivia question. You know, I'm totally shocked and amazed that nobody got the answer to my question.
And I've got to say, I did sort of do some browsing to see if I could even have a go at answering this one, and I've got to say, I am totally stumped. So I think what you need to do is let everyone know out there so they can go, oh, that was so obvious. So, hey, big drum roll.
No. It wasn't obvious at all. I was trying to be difficult. I mean, that barn burner you hit us with recently with the name of the prime ministers got me to thinking, so I went and I looked hard. So here's what my question was to the audience. What notable person associated with the 2008 presidential race skipped the third grade? Now, we got quite a few answers in, you know, people making jokes about President Bush who may not have finished third grade, but that's not what we were looking for. The answer to this question will surprise you, and it is Chelsea Clinton.
Ah, the daughter of presidential candidate Hillary and President Clinton.
Yes, indeed. Once upon a time, Chelsea was such the smart girl that her parents got her jumped ahead one full grade.
Ah, so it'd be now interesting to see how many people are going to say, is this competition becoming too hard? Because I've got to say, I would never have guessed that one in a month of Sundays on that one. And that was a real stonker of a question. Now, what I want to know know is, do we get to spit the prize?
You know, unfortunately, we're part of the team around here, so we don't get to keep those points. I really would like to keep some of them. I've seen the workshop. They make these things by hand every day here at the ATS compound, and I really wish that, you know, they at least let us have one so that we could, you know, take it home to put on the mantelpiece or something, but the bylaws just won't allow. So I guess we're gonna have to send them back. They're gonna be recycled or do whatever they do with them. So in the meantime, what's your brain teaser for the week?
First of all, I want to say there's no doubling up here, people. So the winner of hopefully the answer to my question doesn't get double bubble on the points, just gets the standard 500 handmade applause points. So my question is, the first person onto this show thread on the Above Politics site, I want to give the person who gives me a brief outline of the Midlothian question. So there you are. I want a brief outline of what the Midlothian question is. First person on the show thread to do that gets the points.
Now, let me clear one thing up here. We are not talking about Elliot Spitzer. That's an entirely different subject. So, you know, I know what you're thinking. You were thinking loathing, immediately your mind jumps to Elliot, but that's not the answer that Martin is looking for.
Nope. So I think we probably will suspect that this answer may come from a more European audience today, but hey, we're just going to have to see. Let's not, people, make it two ducks in a row, so get your thinking caps on, find the answer, Midlothian question, tell us what it is, and you get the prize.
There you go. See, now, since I've already mentioned Elliot Spitzer, let's go ahead and kick him around for a while, because, you know, he was widely predicted to be America's first Jewish president, but that's not going to happen now, and all I can say is that's what he gets for not eating kosher.
You're absolutely right there, and I don't think we're going to be the first or last people to give him a kicking. Did you see his wife just standing beside him, being the dutiful wife and trying to look all sort of, oh, what a burden this is all to me, and I can just imagine the thoughts going through her mind was, yep, after this one, I'm going to take you for every cent you're worth. But very interesting case, certainly has made across the world. I've seen press reports all around the world on this one, so it is a fairly big story. And you're absolutely right, it shows, you know, he obviously took some vows when he got married, but decided that they weren't worth a great deal. And now they're sort of trying to put this huge prostitution agency on a more global basis, and they say that this agency had offices all around the world. So quite interesting to see that he was dabbling in this one. And whose money was he spending, Justin?
Oh, it's quite likely he was spending his own money. He does come from a well-moneyed background in the first place, but Elliot was a very high and mighty sort from day one. I remember when he first came to national attention, and he made his bread and butter out of busting gangsters and hookers. So when it came to this particular crime, he knew all the seedy ways in which to shield his transactions, to hide his money. But like most fancy pants politicians, as we Americans say, he got too big for his britches, and now he is busted.
But what I want to know is, is there some conspiracy here? Is this something that was just planned? Did the FBI just stumble upon this one by accident? I'm sure our members are going to start posting something.
The nail on the head. The first thing that happened was the FBI had started a wiretapping operation against the Emperor's Club, which is the name of this infamous escort service. Now, in an entirely unrelated matter, Elliot Spitzer's bank started to notice that some of his money was doing rather unusual things. It was moving back and forth between accounts in suspicious fashion. So they did what they're supposed to do. They notified the FBI. Now, the tickler here is that one of the field agents associated with the wiretap happened to recognize Governor Spitzer's voice. One thing leads to another. Somebody probably read the interoffice memo, and all of a sudden they had two separate cases that very neatly converged, and it's not going to surprise me at all if client number 9, as he used to be known, is going to keep himself out of jail by spilling what he knows about the financial operations of the Emperor's Club.
Ah, interesting. It sounds like that that Mr. and Mrs. Spitzer don't appear to have joint bank accounts, then.
I would suspect that you're right. The look that she was giving the press the first time she met with, you know, the first time we saw her when Elliot was confiding his family matter to us, she looked like she's like do I kill a reporter or do I kill him? No, he's got the money. They don't. I can, yeah, I'll do that. Now, the second time we saw her at the podium, she obviously was thinking, you know, do I get the Beamer? Do I get the Ben? Or do I ask for both?
I suspect whatever happens, if she decides to go down that route, she's probably going to end up employing some very successful lawyers who are no doubt going to make millions themselves and make sure that Mrs. Spitzer walks out of this with as much money as she can get. And, you know, you can call me being moralistic on this one, but hey, you play with fire, you get burnt. It's as simple as that one. You know, this is something that I think we see all over the world anyway. You know, we see these politicians, senior leaders, who sometimes try to, you know, preach to us, moralize to us about how they should lead, you know, decent, how we should lead decent and upfront lives. And then guess what they're doing? As soon as they're off air, you know, they're doing all these, how should we say, interesting things with their lives. And I just think it's, I'm not surprised. I just wonder how many other other governors in the states are probably doing the similar things and just breathing a sigh of relief saying, whew, it's not me. I've got away with it this year.
Well, unfortunately, the salacious activity that we're referring to here is more common in Washington, D.C. than you might think. I mean, I've been there myself as a white-collar working professional, and the place is a regular Sodom and Gomorrah when it comes to temptation.
So does that mean we're going to see some threads about you then?
Well, you know, that was in my past. During the years of my wayward youth, and so far as I know, nobody got anything on film, and for certain of those crimes, the statute of limitations passed, so I'm feeling brave.
Ah, good news on that one. Ben, I just wanted to move off a little bit, and it's sort of moving away, so but I think the interesting thing is that the deputy governor, do you call them deputy governors?
Lieutenant governors
he's actually blind, legally blind, which I think is I understand he'll be, if he gets the top job, which is no reason why he shouldn't do, but he'll become the first legally registered blind governor in U.S. history.
And what an edge that is going to give him. Now, it's a little known fact, but I'll step up and confess here that I myself am legally blind, so just on the basis of that, I know that this new guy is going to be totally cool, but like I said, his poor eyesight actually gives him a tremendous inside edge, because he doesn't care what people think about him, because he spent an entire lifetime never being able to read facial expression. So he's going to be very safe in his own self-esteem, and if it does come down to it, he'll be able to walk into a room with the lights off and deal with everybody even handedly.
And that could actually, that I think is going to be a very interesting thing to see, because ultimately he is going to pick up on the way people present the nuances of their voice. And let's face it, we are all told allegedly that it's very difficult sometimes to lie your voice changes pitch. So I think that will be incredibly interesting. But because, you know, you're registered blind, does that mean you can use some of your connections somewhere and we can maybe expect him on the show?
You know, I'm going to see what I can do, but it's bad form in the Brotherhood to abuse this kind of power. So I'm going to try to avoid it. I'll put out some unofficial feelers, you know, when I'm out doing the cocktail circuit. I'll drop a few hints. But if they don't get back to us, then I'm just going to let it go.
And talking of cocktail parties, I did have an invite from Jimmy Carter, but because you and I made a little faux pas...
Oh, he's going to hold that against us?
I'm afraid he is, and we have to thank Expert11 for bringing this to our attention in a very mature and professional way, to say when we were talking about living U.S. presidents, we ex-presidents, we did inadvertently forget President Carter, and I did receive the notification from his office that I'm certainly not invited to his next cocktail party, but we want to thank Expert11 for taking the time to bring us up gently and politely, and just remind all our listeners that if you want to post anything, if we say something stupid, hey, you can jump down our throats, because that's the price we pay for being here. And if we say something clever and you want to agree or disagree with us, just go to the show thread, post away. We do look at it regularly. We do come back and answer, and we're more than happy to enter into a dialogue and a debate. And finally, again, President Carter, we're sorry.
Oh, boy. Well, you know what that means. It means that we're going to, because I can already hear what the ATS lawyers are going to say to us. So let's, right here and now, let's adapt the show format. that, and let's put out an open invitation. Any of the ATS listeners, if you guys want to get on the air and have your say with us, whether you want to pick a bone with us or you want to do like our recent ATS moderator did and break some kind of story here, then grab that keyboard, go to AboveTopSecret.com, click on the ATS Mix Show forum where you can find our contact information, and get in touch with Martin and I directly. If you know how to use the U2 system, we're easy to find. Even though we have forgotten about President Carter, we are still easy to find, and we will try to be gentle.
Absolutely, and just to maybe extend some of the scope of what our members like what might want to do on the show, we're going to throw it open. If a couple of you want to do maybe a mini debate, we'll record it as part of the live show. Maybe Justin and I will moderate it. So if maybe a couple of you want to think, right, I want to try my hand. I know a lot of members go on to the forums, and there's some debating thought forums. But if you want to take it up to a level, maybe do it face-to-face, head-to-head, voice-to-voice, we'd welcome that opportunity.
Hey, I think that's a great idea, because I just happen to know that we are insured.
So good news.
We can stand the casualties. If you guys and gals want to bring it on, we can take it.
Absolutely. So there's your opportunity for your 15 minutes of fame in the Above Top Secret world.
You know, speaking of fame and infamy, let's have a brief look at the U.S. presidential races. I saw the most incredible thing before the show. I was in the ATS newsroom, and again, I say I don't know why they need 45 big screen plasmas, but they were in there, and I was watching C-SPAN, which is, as you know, is the government cable channel, which shows you what goes on in the House of Representatives and on the floor of the Senate. So before the show, I'm in there, I'm watching this thing, and I kid you not, I see Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama sit down next to each other. They hold a conversation before they go to vote, and as heaven is my witness, no blood on the floor. They talked, they moved away from each other, everybody kept their fingers and toes, they went, they voted, and they moved on. It was incredible.
Well, at least they're doing the job they've also been paid for, because I suppose one of the concerns must be that if you're pitching for the top job, how interested are you in your constituency? They have a constituency. They're going to have people who have voted for them, people who are in their states and who are saying, look, I need you to intervene. And it is good news that they are taking time out of their busy agendas to do this. And I suppose, you know, they're both Democrats. There's a reason they're a member of the Democrats party, because they have some, they obviously share somewhere along the line some ideals of what they actually want to do with the country. And I suppose it's good that they can actually sit down, civilized human beings, have a maybe. I'd love to know what they said, and I'm sure there are people who maybe can lip read who can tell us exactly what they said, but you know, I don't suppose it was lovey-lovey, do you want to come over, or by the way, here's my recipe for meatloaf, but I'm just delighted, you know, it's good to see that they can actually almost separate the two things away and realise, yeah, that some unpleasant things may be said as part of the campaign, but they can actually sit down when it matters and say, actually, we have to do what's right for the country, so hey, we have to sit down, decide how we're going to vote as a party, as an organisation, and move forward. Because you just have to think, you know, I noticed that I think the last female vice presidential candidate, I believe, Geraldine Ferreira has resigned.
Heavens.
She did something unspeakable. She used the race card.
Oh yes, indeed. Now, for those of you who don't know, Geraldine Ferraro was once upon a time the Democratic vice presidential candidate on the ticket with Walter Mondale in 1984. Now, that happened to be one of the very first elections in which I ever voted, and there's really no way to sugarcoat this. Geraldine is still to this day a potty mouth. And back in 1984, she dropped the F-bomb more frequently than the United States was testing nuclear weapons back in those days.
And believe you me, if you and I use the F-bomb, we do get some serious words.
Well, certainly so. Now, in recent days, Mrs. Ferraro made the accusation that Barack Obama is only where he is today. He's only doing as well as he's doing today because he's a black man. And I personally can't think of very many other things that she could have possibly said that would have been more overtly racist. And now she has since made the talk show circuit, claiming time and time again that if anybody should apologize, it should be them and they should apologize to me. The narrow-mindedness of that has been shocking.
But I still go back, and I know we've spoken about this on the show in the past. I still think it's something that will happen if Barack Obama becomes the Democratic candidate. You know very well that the Republicans, somewhere along the line, will throw the race card out there. They will do that. Now, you know, Senator McCain will step away from this, hands up in the air, absolutely horrified, saying, "Woo, this is horrendous. This is the wrong thing to do." But I've got to think they will want to play the race card. And I go back to it. America is still implicitly a very conservative country. And you think of the, you know, you think of maybe from the center and the right of the Democrats out to the, from the center to the left of the Republicans. That's probably where the huge, vast majority of the constituents of the US people sit. They are implicitly still incredibly conservative, and I've said it before, I still wonder whether the American people are ready to take the step from the what has been traditionally the white man being president to the absolute antithesis of this, the absolute opposite end of that is a black man as president. And you're right, quite clearly, Geraldine Ferraro should be condemned for the comments. However, I don't think she was speaking too far away from maybe what a lot of people may be thinking. And it is something that I suspect if Barack Obama gets the nomination, I suspect it will be said, maybe not publicly, maybe not openly, but I think it will be something that a lot of people will be thinking about. And maybe she's had the gumption to actually put it up and say, hey, this is a question that we have to sit down and actually discuss as a country.
Well, I understand your point, and I realize that 20 to 25% of the country may still be racist. I mean, we have certainly come a long way since the reforms of the 1960s, and a great many of the people from that period are still with us. They are they're in their mid-50s and early 60s, and they'll be with us for the next 20 years at least. But I still contend that we are sufficiently matured as a society, sufficiently evolved as a nation to actually do this. Now, I say this from the standpoint of somebody who is opposed to his politics. I don't like the idea of what the Democrats intend to do to us in the not-too-distant future. I don't like their vision of big government. But in the same event, I've got to be perfectly honest and tell you that gender and race are not factors to me at all. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to chalk that up to my blindness, and I'll plead guilty to that. But it's been my experience in the modern world as a white-collar professional who's gone to job interviews, who's had to compete, that in today's world, race and gender don't matter as much as they used to. And I would even go so far as to point out that if you look at the pillars of what Obama is standing on, he's doing three things. He's acting with professional dignity, acting with personal good manners, and he's putting forward an optimistic message, and that contrasts sharply with what Senator Clinton is doing and what Senator McCain is doing. By comparison, Clinton and McCain are just grumpy old sourpusses, and when you try to run that against sunshine and optimism, you are going to get your butt kicked.
And I think you've summed something up really well there, that you could potentially see Clinton and McCain as, you know, part of the establishment, or much more part of the political establishment, and Obama not being part of that establishment. And I think you're absolutely right there. But I still think I almost think there are two races currently need to be run in the Democratic presidential campaign. And I just wonder how people are thinking. There are two competitions. There are two thought processes. One, who would actually make the best president, and who actually stands the best chance of beating the Republicans? And I wonder if the answer to those questions is actually the same person.
Well, from the standpoint of a political analyst who likes to get on his soapbox every now and then again, I'm not afraid to point out the irony of the situation here. It's likely that Obama will get his party's nomination because he's obviously catching more flies with honey than he is with vinegar. His optimism and his positive tone will carry him forward, but when he is when he's put out to compete against John McCain, you're going to have the optimistic new guy with the short resume versus the old guy who's willing to tell you like it is with the long resume. And there, it's true, it's tremendous. We've seen huge outpourings from the young voter. But as a longtime political follower, I can tell you that the general election functions way different than the primary election, and it's altogether possible that all those young pups who put Obama over the top may decide for whatever reason to stay home on November 8th when it comes time to get the job done. And the old folks, the over 40 crowd, the people that have kids in college, they're the ones who are going to make the final decision. And they could very well decide that long resume is better than short resume, even though Mr. Obama is very optimistic. The simple truth of the matter is that we live in dangerous times, and we need somebody who's not just going to feed us sunshine. We need somebody who's going to tell us like it is, what it is, and how it is. And that it's ironic that such a transformative candidate could win his party's nomination and then go on to lose the presidency.
And I think that's actually, I wonder how many people in the Democratic Party, maybe some of the senior leaders in the party, I wonder how many of them are starting to think this. And I don't disagree with you on that one. You know, the optimism, and you genuinely see it. You know, his campaign does seem to be a lot more upfront, a lot more ethical, and there doesn't seem to be so much backbiting and name-calling. But I go back to it. Who is going to stand the best chance of defeating the Republicans? Because, you know, I get the feeling that American people are probably thinking it's time for a change. You know, we certainly have this kind of concept in the UK a fair bit. But, you know, one party will maybe win 2-3 elections on the trot, maybe even 4 elections. And almost people think it's time for a change. And I get the impression that people in the US are sort of thinking maybe it's time for a change. Let's give the Democrats an opportunity. But you're absolutely right. When someone goes into that polling booth, there's a difference between voting for who you think will make the best candidate to be nominated and who will be the person that will at the moment run the world's largest economy, will run the world's most, you know, powerful country with potentially one of the largest militaries. Then I think people sit down and you maybe have a different thought process when you're sitting in that polling booth and you're thinking, well, hang on a minute, which way do I swing this one? Do I swing it Democrat or do I swing it Republican?
That's very true. Now, speaking of world's largest economy, you know, that may not be the case for too much longer. While I was in the ATS newsroom checking out Hillary and Barack on the Senate floor, I happened to notice on one of the news feeds that the American dollar is at an all-time low against the euro.
And also against the pound, I believe. I mean, you know, if you're a Brit and you want to go to the States on holiday, and now's a great time. Everything is half price, as far as I'm concerned. Your country is half price at the moment.
Oh, it's funny you should say that, because during the 1980s, specifically the period of 82 to 86, when the Japanese economy was boom, 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 booming, everybody was hugely freaked out because you had all of these very wealthy Japanese civil servants and corporate workers, and they were coming to the United States where they were buying the most fantastic luxuries. And from about 86 to 90, then you started to see the Saudi oil boom, and it was just unthinkable by 1990 when political commentators stepped in front of a microphone to rant that the Japanese and the Saudis were buying up so much of the country. I mean, at one point in time, the Saudi royal family owned a piece of Rockefeller Center in downtown New York. That was scandalous.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting things I also saw on the ticker tape this afternoon was that the gold is now trading at $1,000 an ounce, which is sort of almost, if you allow for inflation, I only think in the early 80s was it much higher. So I think it is interesting, the whole economy and that gold and oil and all these resources are going up. But absolutely right. And I just wonder, you know, some people are saying that the American war in Iraq and Afghanistan has basically been funded on money that they've borrowed from the Chinese government.
Oh, it's not just that. The recent economic stimulus package that was passed by President Bush onto the Congress where the weasels rubber stamped it, that whole thing is a joke. They spent $165 billion up front to give 130 million taxpayers an average of $600 apiece. Now, by the time they're done with all of the paperwork and the cleanup, this whole thing is going to have actually cost them $300 million. And for what? That $600 for the average family doesn't even pay a month's rent. So it's not like it makes a substantial dent in anybody's debts or in their standard of living. Now, I bring this up because a few shows back, you and I were talking about the possibility of, you know, the United States Treasury having to borrow $300 million for some, or $300 billion for some project or another. Now, I did the math, and it looks to me like for $300 billion, the U.S. Treasury could have given every man, woman, and child, to include the 12 to 20 million illegals in this country, $1 million. Now, if you're gonna kick the economy in the butt and get it going, you know, that seems like a much more practical use of $300 billion.
But the interesting thing is, if you say, even if you take the $600, and, you know, I'm going to have to accept from you that, you know, $600 doesn't even pay a month's rent, even if you say make it 6,000, 60,000, whatever figure it is, people are going to go out and spend it. Most people will go out and spend it on consumers, electronics, stuff for the home. And unfortunately, do they just perpetuate the problem? Because what they do is they go and say, oh, I'll have that nice plasma TV, I'll have an iPod, I'll have this, I'll have that. And then what they do is they just go and buy it in the store in Walmart, knowing full well that Walmart bring it in from China and the Far East. And you don't actually solve anything. All you probably do is say, well, the Chinese government has given the US government $300 billion, and basically China not only makes money on the loan, but also makes money on the fact that, you know, all the goods that have been bought with that money have come from China. Double bubble.
Oh, it's incredible. It's like a crack dealer giving out free samples.
Absolutely. And you've got to be thinking the Chinese government, I think I heard a statistic on the radio that China's foreign reserve surplus, I think for sometime like either last year, rose by $500 billion in just a single year. So, you know, you're getting to the stage where ultimately there is a battle, I think, between who is regarded as the global superpower. And at some stage, shockingly, I think the US will lose this at some stage, and, you know, China will become that power. And China is already starting to flex its economic and political muscle. And what's going to be happening, you know, when potentially maybe Russia and China get together and maybe their relationship becomes a little bit closer and they're prepared to work together, you know, are you going to see the demise and maybe a swing of power that's predominantly, be brutal, in the last maybe 15-20 years has probably been a more Western orientated power base, that potentially the power base for the globe is actually moving further and further, from my perspective, east, from your perspective, west.
Oh, absolutely. It's incredible. Just within the last week, the central bank issued $200 billion in stopgap loans to try and keep all of the major banks and hedge funds and stock portfolio carriers, to try to keep these guys in business. This is more of the Bush administration's trying to keep the hot potato in play so that it doesn't get dropped on their watch. If there's anything that really just honks me off as a citizen, it's the way this administration is failing to successfully address the problem. All they're doing is trying to keep the ball in play so that when the economy does crash, it will result in far more devastating losses to the average consumer. It's absolutely scandalous. And honestly, I can foresee a day in which the Russians look at Eastern Europe and say, no more natural gas for you, And the Americans can't do anything because they had to mothball their aircraft carriers for budget reasons.
Absolutely. But I think one of the interesting things that I'm seeing is that the rest of the world, and we've just had the budget in the UK where the Chancellor of the Exchequer gets up and tells us, you know, what the economic forecast is for the future and how much money he's going to spend. And basically the UK Chancellor has decided to do the stable thing and tax us on, you know, drinking, smoking and driving. And everyone's calling it a stable budget. But it's interesting that our Chancellor is saying that he sees a slowdown in the UK economy. He doesn't see a recession in the UK economy. And what is interesting is that you may be starting to see a split between the US economy and maybe some of the other Western economies, that whilst we will be impacted by it, we may not be impacted as severely as the US is. I mean, everyone's talking, I know you and I touched on it on some of these shows, Justin, that, you know, the US is it technically in recession? I think most analysts in the US would say that the US economy is actually shrinking, whereas a lot of places in Europe are saying, yes, it's going to slow down, but it's still going to continue to grow. And that, I think, is very interesting, that the US economy is in recession. Maybe other economies that are closely allied to it are not in recession. And the forecast is that some of them may not go into recession.
Now, here's a question for you that you yourself are in a unique position to answer. What can the UK, or even more specifically the European Union, do to build a firewall against what they already know is coming?
I think one of the things that they're going to try and do is probably foster deeper and tighter relations, particularly with Russia. And I think the reason they're going to do that is to maybe get away from a dependency on oil and resources from the US. So we're going to have a supply that's potentially based in the continent of Europe rather than maybe coming from the Middle East that is currently impacted by whatever military campaigns are going on there. But I think we will probably have a much more open, a more frank, a more broad diplomatic and also trade relationships with Russia and with China. I still think that, you know, the US will still be a horrendously large economy and will still be a massive influence for Europe. I mean, one of the things I noticed on some, there are some threads about this one, you know, there's been this huge refueling tanker contract that hasn't gone to Boeing, has gone to EDAS, which is the parent company for Airbus and Northrop Grumman. So, you know, that's interesting, that maybe the US will be saying, well, actually, maybe we have to start looking outside of the US for some of these huge contracts. I see us probably trying to play a bit of a balancing game between the US and potentially between China and Russia. And we're probably going to sit on the fence for a while. And then whichever way this fence goes, we're just probably going to go with it because it's in our interests to do so. You know, you think the European economy, if you take the EU, we're probably roughly the same size from a population as the US. And you have to think the value of the euro is more than the dollar. And maybe some of these people who are withdrawing money out of the US are going to say, well, where else can I put it? Well, I'm going to put it in the UK. I'm going to put it in Germany. I'm going to put it in France. I'm going to put it into other EU countries because I actually see some growth there.
Well, you're really going to have no choice because if the US economy crashes, as so many predict, you know, you won't be able to help anybody if you follow us down the toilet.
Absolutely. And shockingly, we're not going to. You know, we've had a fairly prudent chancellor, despite the fact I don't always agree with what Gordon Brown, who was the chancellor, has done. You know, we've typically had a fairly prudent chancellor. He's been fairly tight. He's not spent money. And I look across the rest of Europe and see that, you know, we're not being affluent. We're not spending loads of money. You're right. We're just going to have to say we're still going to be allies. All the responsibilities that come with NATO, and particularly with the UK and our partnership with you in Iraq and Afghanistan, that's going to remain. But I think from a trade point of view, we will be looking to protect ourselves. And one way we will protect ourselves is potentially in Europe for us to not look to the West as much, but to start looking to the East. That, I'm afraid, is happening already and will continue to happen.
Oh, scary, scary. But on that very tremulous note, we have come to the end of another fun-filled edition of the Above Politics show. So for everybody here in the studio, I'm Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time on the Above Politics show.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you too can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at AbovePolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.